This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. Coming up at 5:30 today, the Take Command Tape Tuesday tape breakdown. I think I said too many words there. The point is, you'll hear Logan Paulson go inside the tape on Jaden Daniels. 6 o'clock, Mark Schlereth. Right now, 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, it's Tischler time.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not my beat.
Our pleasure, of course, to welcome in the co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast with J.P. Finley, Mitch Tischler. Mitchell, happy Tuesday. Anthony, you forgot the air horns. How dare you?
I'm doing well. I'm not that mad at Anthony for 1 minute. Not the end of the world.
Okay, we can do that. We'll allow, if Jaden Daniels can miss one throw, then Anthony can miss one set of air horns. I guess that's perfectly allowable. Mitchell, we're going to go straight to the heart of the sports talk radio world right now. Davante Adams has apparently requested a trade from the Las Vegas Raiders. The Commanders certainly could use an upgrade to the receiving core. Apparently, it'll cost a second-round pick plus, is what the Raiders are telling teams. If you are Adam Peters, are you calling Tom Telesco out in Las Vegas and saying, do you want a party? Do you want to dance?
I got to be honest, I stand kind of where I was over the summer when all the talk with Brandon Ayuk was going on. I'm not ready to trade him. I'm not ready to trade for another receiver, and certainly not a guy that's making as much money as Davante Adams is. We're walking into a situation where next year Terry McLaurin is going to need a new contract. If you have another receiver on the roster making a ton of money, you're setting the bar for what Terry has to make, and ultimately are you going to be in a position where you're going to be able to pay, you know, two of your two premier wide receivers. And, oh, by the way, the offense is working kind of okay right now without having a second premier wide receiver. The mojo's going. Things are moving in the right direction. I don't know why you're going to mess up the apple cart right now.
I hear you on most of that, and I mostly agree with you. My only contention is, and why I have to at least be like, maybe, is Davante Adams is not Brandon Ayuk. And that is an important distinction, I think, when you talk about Terry McLaurin. And because I actually fundamentally disagree with the idea that whatever Davante is making is what Terry has to, because Terry is a tier below Davante. And that is clear, unlike Ayuk and Terry, who I think are much more similar players. Like, I think because of who Davante is and because he has been a bona fide top five blue chip guy, I think it is a different conversation, and he automatically becomes your one. Now, yes, the offense is working right now, but like, if you want to talk about sustainability and making sure it keeps working, like, Davante Adams is certainly not going to hurt. But I just think, Mitch, that because Davante is Davante, and he's like one of five guys I would say this about. It's like him, Justin Jefferson, Chase, you know, a Tyreek Hill falls into that category where you go, they are a tier above even Terry McLaurin, as great as he is. I think it is a bit of a different conversation.
Yes, I mean, listen, Davante Adams was a great receiver, certainly when he was catching balls from, you know, a first-round Hall of Fame quarterback. The numbers out there in Las Vegas haven't been particularly good. He left Green Bay because he wanted to go play with his friend out in Las Vegas. That didn't work out particularly well, and now he wants to trade, and you're going to have to give up a second-round plus to go get him. Are we sure that he's interested in being in Washington long term? Is he going to be happy here? Is he going to be a malcontent? You know, I think that the core of this, of what Dan Quinn is trying to bring in here, has to do with, you know, types of players that he wants and guys who are out there giving it their all. I'm not saying that Davante isn't that guy, but let's be honest. I mean, the guy is 32 now, 31, and, you know, the numbers that he's put up granted, you know, you can play the chicken or the egg game here, but it's not like his numbers in Las Vegas, you know, have been great last year. He had 1,100 yards this year. You know, things are starting to go downhill. I don't know. I think long-term need to figure out what they want to do at receiver. But if you're bringing in Devontae and that cap number, you're basically guaranteeing that you're going to have to pay Terry a pretty big number to keep him around.
Mitch Tischler, Beltway Football Podcast, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Okay, that's the new news, if you will. The fun part about having you on, Mitch, is we always talk about the offensive line and how the Commanders played in the trenches, and that's going to be a fun conversation this week. When you watch this game back, or you're watching it live, taking it in as you did out there in Arizona, was this about as good as Washington played up front, especially on the offensive line? We can talk about the defense in a second. Clearly their best game of the season. But offensive line-wise, is this the best Washington has played since, I don't know, Trent Williams was here?
Yeah, probably. I mean, quite frankly, I thought last week against the Bengals was better than this week against the Cardinals. I thought last week a lot of Jaden's success came from the fact that the O-line was able to give him all day and night to stand around and find someone to throw to. This week the O-line was good again, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think, you know, I tried as we start getting close to the season, you know, during training camp, folks were concerned about the O-line. And I was saying, you know, it's more of a sum of the parts and how your offensive coordinator uses them and all these different things. And I think we're seeing that with Cliff in this offense. But specifically to their play, last week they were extremely good against the Bengals. And then this week against the Cardinals, they certainly were good. But this week against the Cardinals was Jaden Daniels just being an elite quarterback and putting his stamp on being, you know, one of the fastest risers in the NFL.
When you look at Brandon Coleman, like, do you like this mix that they're throwing right now, where he and Cornelius Lucas this week, you know, it's 20 snaps for Coleman, 19 for Lucas? Or are you seeing enough that you think he's ready to just be the starter and Lucas is going to be a full-time backup?
Yeah, I mean, I'm ready to see Brandon Coleman out there full-time. I do think at the moment, just like the rest of this offense, everything is working so well that I don't want to make any major changes, because I do think there's a little bit to, you know, kind of okey-doking the defense every other possession, because Brandon Coleman and Cornelius Lucas are two kind of different tackles. Brandon beats you with his speed and his strength, and Cornelius is more about his size and just kind of massive frame. And so it is tough for defensive linemen to kind of adjust based on, you know, who's lined up across from them. You see the best pass rushers in the league like to use kind of the first and second quarters to set up kind of their big sack moves. You know, they'll work up field a lot, and then as you get later in the game, the counter to working up field is kind of cutting underneath and getting in there. And if the Commanders are going to be rotating tackles like this, you're not able to set up those guys quite as much as you would, because you're not getting as many reps against each person. And I think it makes it, you know, a little bit difficult. So things are going well right now. I don't want to really change a whole lot, but I think when you look big picture, I think it's fairly obvious that Brandon Coleman is the better of the two players and has a higher ceiling as we start moving further into this year.
Yeah, and clean up on Isle Hoffman. Stat keeping, Lucas total 37 snaps, Coleman 34. I was looking at the pass block numbers. But I do think it's interesting that, like, you know, you can say this about some of the running back rotation, their receivers. Mitchell, it doesn't feel like Cliff is changing. Like, I'll reword it this way. I feel like Cliff is doing a good job of not being predictable based off personnel. And whether that's packages in terms of two tight ends versus one versus three, which tackle is in the game, which running back is in the game. This is an offense to me that feels like he can do anything at any time from anywhere on the field. And that is extraordinarily dangerous. If you look at this offense and you try to poke holes in it right now, just to try to predict of if you're a defense trying to be the one that stops them, What do you think you have to do against an offense that feels like it can do anything, anytime, anywhere?
There's only been, I mean, I'm sure that there's an NFL, there's a defensive coordinator out there who has seen something that's more predictable, but to me there hasn't been a whole lot of, you know, keys where you could point out and say, hey, this means that this is going to happen. The one thing that I've seen is that when they go to the pistol and line up with both running backs kind of on either side of of Jaden. That generally has been an inside run for this team, but that's such a minute, small piece of the offense that I don't know if that's even enough of a key for somebody to try and pick up on the play calling. And I think that's what's been impressive about what they've been doing with Cliff is that, you know, obviously we saw it with Jeremy McNichols versus Austin Ekeler. I'm not saying that McNichols is the same player that Ekeler is, but it explains why they wanted to keep Jeremy McNichols over a guy, you know, like Chris Rodriguez or some of the other running backs that were in in camp, and they clearly valued a guy who has the ability to be to stay in and block, but also be able to carry the ball on occasion and get out into the flats and make some big plays in the pass game. It's kind of a player-proof offense at the moment. I think you and I can both agree that the numbers that this team has been putting up the last 3 weeks are staggering, and you can't expect that it's going to stay that way, you know, the rest of the year. And if it is, this offense is going to end up putting up historic numbers across the board, you know, comparable to the best of the Tom Brady offenses or, you know, greatest show on turf or some of these other, you know, offenses over the years in the NFL that, you know, teams have been able to point to. And as things are working, you know, I think you just keep with the flow and keep letting the good times roll. And as teams start picking up on different tendencies, then maybe you start making some adjustments. But like you said, they've done a very good job of being multiple and doing multiple things at different looks.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing, too, where I think Cliff has done a great job of mitigating some of the issues that come with some of the things that he does. Put less generically, if you run out of shotgun, for instance, 90% of the time, you run opposite of where the back is. So if your back is on the right, you run to the left because that's how that goes. It's just an easier handoff than trying to run like a counter action. One, they have run some counter off of that. And two, they're using the two-back stuff enough that you can't run 90% both ways. And so you can't really cheat as a defense. And so there's just all these little things that Cliff does that I think are really smart that mitigate some of the problems that teams have when they do some of the things that he's trying to do, whether it's using the quarterback's legs, whether it's running out of shotgun, whatever. Like, he's saying, oh, that's a problem. Well, here's how I fix it. And it's like, why isn't everyone doing this all the time?
I'll tell you, one of the plays I'm looking forward to seeing, it's not a novel play in the NFL, but what I've seen in the first 4 weeks that I like so much is when they run a wide receiver tunnel screen or a little wide receiver out to the right, they also run it out to the left, and they kind of let Jaden diagnose which one he likes better and kind of goes with it. Whether it's this week, next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks from now, at some point, they're setting up for that slot receiver who is the main blocker in the tunnel screen to flip his screen and just go and just run a go route. And there were a couple times last week against the Cardinals where their safeties were clearly keying on the wide receiver screen game and starting to attack a little bit early. And I think it's because the Commanders haven't quite shown any of the kind of secondary plays that you work off of the wide receiver screen. I think coming up soon, we're going to see, you know, one variant of it, and it's going to be a Luke McCaffrey in the slot or a Lamide Zaccheaus, and they're going to be setting up like they're going to block for that wide receiver screen, take a nine route and just go with it. And that thing could have been wide open in Arizona a couple times.
Yeah, that's a great call. They did that once with Ertz, I think, in week two. He drew a penalty on it. They got him up the seam. But also, like, if they're doing it both sides and, you know, teams are like, well, fine, we're not going to give you either. That's a tough ask because QB draw. Now, all of a sudden, you got a wide open middle of the field and Jaden Daniels running through holes. Like, that's not a good solution for a defense. So just, I think Cliff has done a great job of leveraging all the skill sets around. Meanwhile, they're trying to figure out how to do that on defense. And it starts with just playing better and harder up front. Did it feel like John Allen was back, Mitch, or is there still another level that you think this interior defensive line has to get to, even if it was unquestionably better on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, John Allen got a sack. The defense as a whole was a huge improvement. John Allen got a sack. Deron had a couple of pressures. The Cardinals still ran for 100-plus yards up, and most of that was right up the gut of that defense. And, you know, the Cardinals took over the ball. The score was 27-14 with 3 minutes, I think, left in the third quarter. And that's a point where teams generally feel, okay, I need to throw the ball and catch up quick. And they were able to go down the field with consecutive runs right up the middle, right through the heart of that Commander's defense. And to me, that just continues to be a big problem. I mean, sure, it's better than it's been. But to me, the improvements in that Washington defense last week were on the second and third levels with your linebackers and in the defensive backfield. The fact that you know, up the middle, they're still getting gashed is a problem. And granted, we're talking about it being a problem after a 42-14 win. So, you know, those guys aren't hurting too bad about it. But at the end of the day, you are going to start playing some better football teams, some teams that are more complete. Not necessarily this week against the Browns, but as you start moving forward, there's going to be, you know, some more competition. And the teams are still able to gash these guys up the middle. To me, that's the problem. And, you know, I don't know what the solution is for it, but certainly getting Dorrance Armstrong free on the edge to get to the quarterback was super important. I thought this group as a whole did a really nice job of rushing the quarterback. You know, all the complaints that we've had over the years with guys kind of doing their own thing and letting the quarterbacks escape either outside the edge or stepping under and getting up the field. They didn't allow Kyler to do that. That first drive was kind of ugly, but as they started moving forward, you know, that thing improved immensely. And so for that, you got to tip your cap and give them a ton of credit. And, you know, you can't fix everything right at once, but certainly they have to figure out something in the run game because they've been giving up a ton of yards on the ground.
Yeah, I just did the quick math. Thanks to PFF's numbers, and they track where runs go. 13 carries for 96 yards up the middle. So either side of the center, that's about 7.8 per carry. So yeah, definitely room to improve there. Last but not least, Mitch, we return to Northwest Field this weekend, which I'm excited about because apparently we're buddies in the press box now. We sit up there and it's like, hey, Mitch, and we can have conversations during the game, which is nice. I have to scream past Michael Phillips, and you know, we can't win them all. But that's fine. But on top of getting to watch the game together in the press box on Sunday, I think this could be the best home crowd this team has had in a long time. Arizona, the opener last year, was actually pretty good. You know, Arizona is a team that's not going to travel a ton here, and it was the first game of the Josh Harris era, et cetera. But football motivated, I think this could be the first, the best home crowd in Landover in a long, long time. What do you expect, and if they can actually perform well and win, how does that set up the rest of the month for them, where they go to Baltimore, but then they come back for two more very winnable home games against Carolina and Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think this is going to be the best home crowd they've had in a long time, in 2016 or so. But this sets up for a couple massive games for the Commanders. I mean, you're going into Northwest Stadium with against the Browns team that typically has a great fan base and travels well, but is down and, you know, frustrated with what their team is doing. They're 1-3. Obviously, you know, we all know about the quarterback situation and what's happening there and injuries up front and, you know, with the running game. I mean, the Commanders haven't had an opportunity to, you know, put their foot down on a game at Northwest Stadium in quite a while. And to kind of, you know, continue showing the NFL, you know, who you are is so important because, you know, going from Cincinnati to Phoenix, you know, there easily could have been a letdown. And that's part of what made last weekend's performance so incredible was, you know, that the team didn't let down, but they kept kind of pushing this thing forward and the defense played better and they continued, you know, commanding the offense unbelievably. You do that with the Browns and you roll into the Ravens game again, you know, that could feel like a playoff-y type, Super Bowl-type atmosphere in 2 weeks in Baltimore with two teams that, you know, are all of a sudden looking at having pretty high expectations as you start looking on. Then you have Daryl Green's jersey retirement game against the Panthers. I think that crowd is going to be awesome because fans are going to be fired up about football. Plus you have, you know, the Daryl Green thing. And then obviously the Bears, you have, you know, number one versus number two pick. And I think Commanders fans are going to be happy to go out there and kind of remind or show Caleb Williams how much they love Jaden Daniels. This could be a really, really fun month for Commanders fans here over the next, whatever it may be, 3-4 weeks.
Yeah, for sure. But it starts this weekend because I think this, for all the boxes that this team and this organization has checked, even the Giants win, like, it's a win, but that was an ugly win. 21-18 over a team with no kicker. And that team, by the way, the Giants, who are not very good. So can they put on a real, legit performance at home? I think that's the challenge. They certainly have the opportunity given the opponent. And it would be a good win if they can keep rolling offensively because that defense is good, and even if their offense stinks. But it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Mitchell, see you Sunday, sir. Thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you back on the radio next week.
I'll see you Sunday. I'm looking forward to it. The one thing you said about this game this weekend is the most important. Browns are the best defense they're going to play. They're going to have played this year.
Yep.
So if they can keep this offensive thing moving against them, that'll tell us a lot.
No doubt about it. Thanks, buddy. I'll talk to you this weekend.
Thank you.
All right, that's Mitch Tischler, everybody, with us. Make sure you check out the Beltway Football Podcast with him and JP. You can catch it in your favorite podcast app, and they also do some stuff with Monumental. So check out the Monumental Sports app, including their post-game live stream, which I think is a different time than our post-game live stream. But don't forget that you can also catch me and Logan take command style Sunday after the game. Home games, we do it together at the field. For road games this year, we're having some fun with some of our other hosts. Ian was the guest if you wanted to go back and check that out from Sunday. It's in the Take Command feed. Speaking of Take Command, next, it's Take Command Tape Tuesday. Jaden Daniels, how did he play? We look at it 5:30 every Tuesday through the lens of the All-22 and the eyes of Logan Paulson. That is next on The Hoffman Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With the second pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Washington Commanders select Jaden Daniels.
Jaden Daniels holds the keys to the Commanders' future.
Daniels is going to walk it in for the touchdown.
Take Command holds the keys to knowing how he played.
In the big moment when you needed to make plays, he just consistently made plays.
It's time for a Take Command Tape Tuesday.
Jaden Daniels just lays it out there perfectly. What a throw.
On the Hoffman Show.
On the offensive side, let's start off talking about the quarterback who, again, just, hey, where's this ball supposed to go? Okay, cool. I'm going to get it there. That is the Jaden Daniels way, to the tune of the highest completion percentage through four games to start a season in NFL history. Two of the top four, by the way, coordinated by Cliff Kingsbury. And Jaden, I'll start with this, Logan, when it comes to Jaden Daniels. I do not think he was as masterfully efficient on Sunday as he was on Monday night. But that's only because what he did on Monday night against the Bengals was one of the great, as we talked about, one of the great quarterback games from efficiency, maximizing literally every play that I think we've ever seen. This game actually felt more sustainable over the long term in terms of the things that he did. And considering how good that he was on Sunday and the fact that it felt sustainable when you watch it back, that is actually, in a way, more terrifying than something that felt like a spectacular outlier on Monday night, even if that spectacular outlier contained a lot of signs of really good stuff that he could do again. If this is who Jaden Daniels can be, winning from the pocket like he did on Sunday and throwing over the middle more, some of these other throws that I know you're about to talk about, like, that is actually, in a way, more terrifying for the rest of the NFL.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned the efficiency, and again, it wasn't quite what it was versus Cincinnati, and again, but there's so many good things to talk about with this offense, like so many good things, and I think, like, we could let's start with the quarterback, I guess. I think the one thing that really sticks out to me is, like, is he the most efficient of all time in this game? No. Is he really, really, really good? Yes. And I think when you look at the thing that blows me away is, I was like, how many bad down and distances were they in this game? And I have
not
two
many
on my sheet. They had a 3rd and 15 where they had to punt, right?
Yep.
And they had a second. They had a 3rd and 13 later
which
in the game.
Which they can get a completion of Noah Brown and pick up.
Tremendous. And then they had a 2nd and 15 where they complete a ball to Luke McCaffrey. Those are three in the whole game, where they were in a bad down and distance. You just don't. I just watched Cleveland. how many they're in down bad down distance like every drive feels
yeah,
like
I am going to ask my boss for hazard pay when I have to watch this Cleveland offense. They are terrible. They just like, live in bad down distances.
And so one of the things I look at is I say like there's a couple throws that maybe he I don't even want to say that because I feel like he's even making good decisions here. But
well, that's the thing really too, right? We talk about efficiency real quick, Logan. Like he may not have gotten the most out of a play, but he still gets a lot. And if like a 10 was available, but you still get an 8, 8's really freaking good.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that sticks out to me about it. It's like just the like the composure and the decision makings of like when to scramble, like when to put yourselves in the best situation to be successful. Like the first scramble of the game, right? It's a 2nd and 4. He scrambles. It's not a big scramble, but he gets you to 2nd and 3rd and 2. Like we're not taking sacks. We're not throwing the football away. We're not in you're always kind of moving forward. Like the worst down and distance before that 3rd and 15 was 3rd and 4. Like that's the worst one of the first half, which is if you're an offensive coordinator, you're like, I love this. This is fantastic. And to kind of follow that point up, like Cliff did a great job of just being like, hey man, like we're going to call I don't want to say perfect game plan because it's so symbiotic. And I think when you're allocating credit, it's really hard to do because there are times where Jaden is elevating the play like we just talked about. Instead of taking a sack, we get a 2-yard scramble. We're in a good down and distance, right? But there are also times where Cliff is calling he's calling quick game at the perfect time. The setup's perfect. We got that choice route or I guess it's a choice to OZ and the 1st, 3rd, and 4 where it's like you get it's man coverage. He's short motions. Everybody in the NFL runs it, but Noah Brown does such a great job of picking, like kind of creating that natural pick for OZ's guy. He's wide open, easy first down. Like the execution is so high. The time you're calling plays is so significant. And then it's so funny after watching, a lot of Cleveland's offense and a lot of watching of Deshaun Watson, the way that Jaden throws the football, the quickness of the release, the quickness of his feet, it cannot be overstated how efficient that makes this offense. Like there are so many times, like there was a spot concept. So a corner, a sit, and a bubble basically, or flat. The Arizona Cardinals have it matched. Like the linebacker's pushing through to the spot. And the quickness that Jaden's able to get back into his drop, the linebacker is sprinting to the spot. And he just delivered, like, it's just like this flick of the wrist, ball's out. And the linebacker could not have played it any better. But Jaden is just physically better than you. And I remember talking to Kyle Shanahan about Jimmy Garoppolo a couple years ago, like when it's 2017. And one of the things he said about Jimmy that makes him hard to cover is the quickness of the release because he can hit those, like, little you know, 5-yard sits, you can hit a slant. And you see that with Jaden. Like there were so many times in this game where like that is covered if there's another quarterback back there. Like watching Deshaun Watson, it's like he can't throw a little 5-yard out because his windup's too long. And so people run and rally under it. That's not a thing with Jaden. And it just makes the floor of the offense so much better. And then in conjunction with that, like Cliff calling the right plays, good play design. Like there was another play where, you know, they run that kind of half boot out to the offensive right. Do you remember that? And they throw the comeback to OZ. Like talk about just making it easy for the quarterback, right? We're going to have the tight end over there. John Bates, going to block the edge. I'm going to run outside of you. If I don't like the comeback and I don't like the cross, I can scramble for 12 yards because there's nobody over here. But I like the comeback, easy release. And I think that's the cool thing about this offense is like Cliff knows when to make the easy things as easy as possible so that when it's time for Jaden to do something crazy, like on that 3rd and 13, like you already talked about, where there's a little bit of pressure, he's in the pocket, he vacates, and then has to kind of deliver an off-platform ball to Noah Brown. Like he can do that because we haven't been leveraged throughout the game. Like there's probably, I'd say, thinking back on it, probably 7, maybe 8, like leverage throws, but everything else is like, it's as it should be. It's easy and straightforward. And I think that's something that makes me so excited about the way Cliff's calling these games. And again, like because Cliff's calling a good game, that doesn't mean that it detracts from what Jaden's doing, because Jaden's doing a fantastic job of keeping you on schedule, elevating versus bad looks. Like the throw to Noah Brown is a great example of that. Like that play is covered. It's dead.
Yes.
You buy a little time, you deliver the football. Like that's an elevation he's bringing to the offense. And the fact that it's happening in big moments and little moments, and they're elevating each other, I think makes this group so incredibly special. You know what I mean? It's just special to watch an offense operate with this level of consistency. It's almost like I was talking to Bram about this the other day. I feel like It's hard to explain. I feel like I am watching something kind of like football magic a little bit, because offenses just don't do this. They just don't do, like, they don't do this. And so the fact that you're getting good play calling, good execution, and we'll talk about this more in a second, but people, when it's not blocked up perfectly or it's not, the route's not exactly right, elevating within the context of the play that way, you're getting plays from Zach Ertz, you're getting plays from Jeremy McNichols. Like, it's just a special thing to watch over the last 2 weeks.
No, you're right. Offenses don't do this. And my only thing that I've told people is like, hey, this is, don't count on this being it. It's the first time they've scored 38 back-to-back weeks since 1991.
I told someone that the other day, I'm like, there's probably going to be a little bit of aggression. They're thinking, oh, Logan, you're being such a hater. I'm like, I'm just doing like math.
Yeah.
Like, it just, like, this is unprecedented.
They can still score 28 a game and be one of the top five offenses in football, and that would be a regression from what they've done the last 4 weeks. It's the first time they've scored 30 in back-to-back games since Kirk was here in 2017. What they're doing right now is wholly unsustainable based off mere NFL math, but they could regress by 10-15% and still be one of the best five offenses in football. Like, it is ridiculous, though, the cohesion that they have and the playmaking. And a couple things I wanted to touch on that you just talked about.
Yeah. Sorry, I went on a little bit of a ramble.
It was a ramble of quality. it was a ramble of quality. I think that, one, there's a couple times you watch the quick game stuff and the ball gets out so, you know, just efficiently that I don't know what the coverage is, but it feels like it doesn't really matter. That, like, they eventually get back in their drop and I'm like, I don't think that should have been open. You're like, I don't know that that's the quote unquote right read, but like, Jaden takes a snap, it's wide open, he throws it, and the ball's there so fast, it literally doesn't matter what the coverage is because the dropper can't get to that space fast enough because he is so quick with his release. And it actually works in conjunction. That thought was kind of in my head as I'm rewatching the 3rd and 13 for like the fourth time. Because if you see what happens with the play, you rewind it back to the top, and then you're like, okay, let me watch Noah Brown here. And you're like, oh, he could have actually thrown that earlier. Is he late on this? Let me go to the end zone angle. Let me see what's happening. And you realize that Noah Brown gets the ball, quote unquote, late because Jaden's not looking at him. He's looking the complete other side of the field. He's reading a multiple, you know, person concept, and Arizona covers it up. And then Jaden's like, okay, well, I don't have that. Now I got a little bit of pressure. Let me get out. He takes like 1.5 steps. He sees Brown, and the time from him seeing Noah Brown open to the ball being out is nothing. It is ridiculous how fast. I mean, you talk about processing speed. The time from thought to action for him is as good as there. I mean, I know this sounds ridiculous. He's a rookie who just played his fourth game. It is as good as anybody in the NFL because I don't know how you could possibly have it happen faster. And so even on a play like that where he's getting through a full progression, takes on pressure, when he ultimately makes the decision, it happens so quickly that you get a conversion on 3rd and 15 and Noah Brown gets a 16-yard gain and voila, the offense keeps on moving.
Yeah, and I think, again, like, you mentioned the quick game. You mentioned the processing ability. Like, it's all there. And I think, like, the other one that was amazing to me was the completion of Luke McCaffrey. Like, they're running like a little stick kind of spot route to the offensive left. He looks at it and he gets back to Luke and delivers just an absolute laser beam. It's man coverage, so it's a little bit easier to make those types of throws. Awesome. And so not only is the quick release there and kind of the simple stuff being simple there, but you see that elite throw to Luke McCaffrey. You see the elite throw to Terry on that 10-yard out. Like, you're not going to see a better throw than that. Like, it's cover three, the cover three player's dropping out. There's a hook player buzzing right under that. And so for him to layer that throw over that defender and get it up and down before Terry's out of bounds on the sideline is one of my favorite throws he's had. And so, like you were saying, he hasn't been overly efficient, but there was a lot of things in this game where I was like, that's the best throw of that type I've seen him make.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
Like, it was a different kind of performance than Monday night, but it wasn't like, in no way is that meant to be a negative. Like, it was incredible in its own unique way.
And in some ways it's more encouraging because I feel like the stuff he did in this game is stuff that's going to serve him better longer. Right. Yeah. Like, we talk about the big throw to Terry in the Cincinnati game, which is, you know, Bram said this, and I think it's very astute. It's maybe the best throw in the last 30 years of the organization. Like, it's a special play, that touchdown on 3rd and 7 in the moment. But those are not, and you need those plays in an offense in the NFL. You need explosive plays. Those are not like down to down things that you see that sustain offenses.
Yes.
The throw to Luke, the throw to Noah, the throw to Terry, the touchdown to Terry, like we're going to look to the offense, to the offensive right. We're going to pull the safety over there. I'm going to come back, settle my feet. I would maybe a tick late, but again, yeah, the release gets.
But he's also waiting for making sure that Kaiser White doesn't undercut it. Like I was going to ask you about this play. I think he takes the slightest of peeks to Jeremy McNichols, which is just enough to move Kaiser White a half step out of the throwing lane. And I trust Jaden that he did that on purpose and he knew he had time because the backside was clean. That he's late, but he knew he could be late.
And late is relative here. I mean, it's like tenths of a second. You're like pausing the frame, you know? So, but like throwing over the middle of the field like that is, again, something we want to see from him. Like, I love that. I love that he's pushing himself that way. And again, those are the throws that you were always kind of questioning when he came out of LSU that we haven't really seen a ton of, you know, at the NFL level so far. And so to see them kind of stack, you know, probably five of them in this game, I think was really, really great to see. In addition to the stuff that he already does really well, which is the quick game, kind of take what's easy, that type of stuff. But that to me is special. That's what, again, like there's the completion percentage, the efficiency is good. But when you start seeing those more challenging throws and the other stuff has remained consistent, you're like, man. And I'm not a guy who gets overly excited, but those were the things that I came out of this game being very excited about, like very excited about that and the defense playing hard. But I think that's what I would kind of settle on there is like, yeah, was it as efficient? No. Were there some things left on the field? Yes. But did you see more variety? More like I use the analogy like clubs in the bag. Like we got the wedge, we got the driver, we got the quick, you know, like it's all there. And I think that's something that I'm like, man, versus like Baltimore versus Cleveland, like you need those clubs because those are really good defenses.
Well, and that's actually a good way to wrap this up here, I think, is like Cincinnati, he was smashing 300-yard drives.
Yeah.
Just time after time, you're like, wow, that's spectacular. Here, he's like bending a 7-iron around a tree and hitting it within 3 feet of the hole. Yeah. And it's like, dang, that is, if he can do that on a regular basis, the 300-yard drive is nice, but your short game is what'll kill you if you can't follow up that 300-yard drive. And boy, did he show that he could use every other club in the bag.
Well, just as a point of comparison, like think about, I don't know how much Indianapolis football you've watched, but think about Anthony Richardson. You know what I mean? Like Anthony Richardson is...
Longest hitter on tour. Wedge game is not great.
Not great, right? And he's the youngest player in the NFL. So, like, we expect him to grow and develop. This is not an indictment of him. But there's a really good juxtaposition of someone who can do the high-level, amazing highlight play whenever you want it because he's got the arm talent, maybe one of the better arm, like, maybe the best arm in the NFL. I don't know. Josh Allen probably has something to say about that.
Yeah.
But it's the things that sustain an offense that he can't do well yet, right? And so, like, that he's got to grow into that. But to see Jaden do that, it that's the thing that and that if for fans, like that's the thing that NFL quarterbacking is, right? Like when you look at the best guys to do it, it's the 10-yard out, the throw over the middle, like those are the things that sustain an offense. And they, you know, Jaden did, we said, what did we say, five times in this game, maybe I'm forgetting one, six or seven, the really good ones, Joe Burrow, you know, not even Josh Allen, maybe Patrick Mahomes you could put in this bucket, but definitely like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, they do it 15 to 20 times a game. And that's how the offense works and is effective. And so it's cool to see he's got that. And I'm really excited to see Cliff kind of give him more, you know, and see how much he can go here.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the team 980, and we're talking to Mark Schlereth. In 9 minutes, the three-time Super Bowl champion will join us to break down the Commanders-Cardinals game. And really, more so than that, and empty his notebook. Stink does this on his podcast, The Stinkin' Truth, which is an Odyssey production. Every single week, whatever game he calls, he kind of empties out the notebook about that game because they have all the production meetings, and obviously a lot of stuff doesn't make the telecast. So they reached out to us, and we're like, hey, Mark would like to empty his notebook on your show. And I was like, sick, come on. And so we did. Or we're going to, I should say, coming up in 9 minutes. So Mark Schlereth with us at 6 p.m. Right now, though, here on a Vibe Check Tuesday, my vibe is excited, Anthony. Did I? Oh, I got it right here. We got Got a game tonight.
Oh, okay.
Got a game tonight. Got two games tonight, actually, in the WNBA playoffs. Liberty Aces game two. I kind of need this one for my prediction to be correct because I picked Aces in four. So I thought they'd split in New York and then Vegas would figure it out at home and get those two before it goes back to New York for game five. Connecticut, they won on the road in game one. So that was unexpected. Minnesota's been incredible, but Connecticut able to get the road win in game one. But the Vegas New York game, Anthony, tonight, and we did our preview on the WNBA show on Hoffman W Sports side of things. I realized very quickly that I had forgotten to mention someone who needed to be mentioned. And I talked about how, you know, to the extent that anyone can match Asia Wilson's production, Stewie is that player. Breanna Stewart is phenomenal, and she can also put up 27 and 10 rebounds, and she was great. You know, a player like Kelsey Plum, who has been great so far in the playoffs, outside of game one of the first series where she was sick, she was great in game two, and she was good again in game one against New York because she was chirping with Spike Lee. Like, she can go toe-to-toe with Sabrina Ionescu. And I said, the player that it seems like you get down the list, and it's like, oh, dang, the other team doesn't have a player like that, is Jackie Young, who was solid in game one, but not dominant. But I didn't give Jonquel Jones near enough credit. And she was great. And her ability to legitimately cause Asia problems down low, because she's so tall and she can get shots off in the post, to pull Asia away from the rim as a rim protector because she can knock down threes, and she did that, to be a size to give Asia problems, you know, in her post-up game, more so, like, Asia was still great and she still got hers, but Jonquel Jones to me is like, it kind of comes down to, okay, second, third order best players in a series that's so star-studded, who's going to be the next best player to step up? And in game one, I think it was Jonquel. And if that can be Jackie or Chelsea Gray in game two, then Vegas can be okay. But they need their stars to play well. Each side does. And then they need someone else to be the X factor. And, it is a tough challenge for them because Jonquel is so uniquely talented. This is a former, I don't know if she won an MVP, but MVP finalist. I'd have to go back and check. But that caliber of player, I'm pretty sure she did win MVP when she was in Connecticut. That still is near the top of her game. And all of a sudden, if that can be who she is, I think New York, and by the way, that's part of the reason they kind of took that next step this season, is they figured out how to integrate her in a way they never did in their first year together last year. Mm-hmm. New York can absolutely win this series and could sweep this series, frankly, if she's that good.
Yeah, the stars got to come to play. I'm not going to lie, the game, I didn't watch the entire game because, again, you know, football
was in the middle
of
an NFL Sunday.
But looking at what Sabrina was able to do, like, she's role on the team has more been a facilitator, but if she's out there, you know, being effective from scoring and she's dropping 30 and you already know what you're getting from Stewie, and then to also bring in Jonquel, it's going to be tough to beat that team. And I mean, Asia, she's going to get off. KP, you know, she showed up, but again, all the stars have to come play. And Jackie and Chelsea, they have to also come.
I mean, Chelsea's been incredible.
I've never seen her have a bad game.
Last, like, 10, 15 games. Post-Olympic break, she was rusty. She was coming off an Achilles injury, right? She knocks off the rust. She's been great. It's why Vegas closed the season 9-1, and then she goes 2 of 7. She only has one assist for the point god, one assist in a playoff game, 4 points. So she's got to be way better. And the other thing, too, is, like, I'm not just saying this because she's my friend and I'm holding up her jersey right now, but, like, Alicia's really important to this series. Alicia Clark, who until her teammate Tiffany Hayes, who also did not give them very much in game one, won it, was the reigning sixth player of the year. So back-to-back mm-hmm. years, Vegas has sixth player of the year, and it's two different players. But Alicia knows Stewie's game and defends her better than maybe anyone in the league because they played together in Seattle. Like, she knows her inside and out. And the only stretches of that game where Vegas was really competitive were when Alicia was on Stewie and, like, slowing her down. Stewie had 34 points. I want to say it had to be like 5 of the 7 misses probably came against Alicia. And Alicia in 25 minutes is +5 in a game they lost by 10. So part of the problem is she got in foul trouble. And so can she stay on the floor and defend without fouling, especially since I don't think most of those came in against Stewie in one-on-one situations, and slow her down. And then, you know, Asia pick it up a little bit, and only 6 rebounds for Asia. Like, that's got to get better. They have to force more misses. That will probably help. And then obviously, you know, get Plum going. Jackie winds up with 17 points, but she's not super efficient in that. And then get Chelsea going. So there's a lot to fix for Vegas tonight, but it should be a good one. Game 2, 7:30. And then we are out of time, so we won't talk about the other series. But it is a fun one to watch, too. I'm excited to get to watch a little bit more of this one. Just a bloodbath of a fourth quarter. Connecticut won the fourth quarter 16-8. In the first game. So 73-70, Connecticut pulled the upset against Minnesota. Minnesota trying to get back on track behind Nafisa Collier tonight. All right, that is tonight on ESPN2 if you want to watch. Check that out. We'll have more coverage on the Hoffman W Sports podcast/YouTube channel hopefully tomorrow. If not, certainly Friday, we have a fresh edition of the WNBA show. But coming up next here on the radio, Mark Schlereth. Yes, Mark Schlereth, NFL on Fox. Former Hog, of course, 3-time Super Bowl champion. He joins us to talk Commanders Cardinals next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.